Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A big juicy ribeye was once the anathema of 1980s low-fat dieters. People were told that fat was the culprit behind weight gain, heart disease, and all manner of health issues. But fast forward to today, and we're embracing fat, not all of it, just the good fats, things like olive oil and avocados. But is there good fat to be found in that ribeye? And is there more good fat or bad fat in a Black Angus cow? How about a Holstein or a Charolais? Today, we're talking with Raluca Matiscu. She leads a team of researchers in the Animal Genetics and Genomics Lab at the University of Florida. She and her team recently presented their latest research findings to the Florida Cattlemen's Association, and we get to hear what she's been studying now. Raluca, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yes, thanks, Joey, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
If you have a question about beef and the fat therein, give us a call. Listeners are always invited to join the show by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So beef kind of got a bad rap there for a while, mainly because it was believed that consuming fat in the diet was what caused many of society's health problems, or at least it was a component of it. Has beef recovered from those dark times?
We are trying, and you are absolutely right. You know, there was a lot of, and there still is a lot of controversy about the role of fat in a healthy diet. The newest research that's coming out is showing that more and more that fat is actually not bad for human health. And the first wave was saying, okay, maybe not all fat is bad, but there's certain fat which is not as good for humans. Now we are learning that not even that might not be true. We are trying to, first of all, educate consumers in terms of what type of fat they find in beef, and then hopefully the new research is going to show which is healthy, and if there is some which is not healthy, which one it is.
So, you know, our understanding of how people metabolize food is evolving, but we're also continuously learning more about the different kinds of fat that are out there. So what kind of fat does beef have? Does it have any good fat in there?
Yes, definitely. I'm glad you asked that question. So basically you have three kinds of fat. You have saturated, which is the one that people used to blame in terms of a negative effect on human health. You have the monounsaturated fat, which is similar to the olive oil. So everybody knows olive oil is very good, so there's the monounsaturated fat. And then polyunsaturated fat is your omega-3 and omega-6, which we know they have some benefits for human health. If you look at the fat you have in beef, about 50% is saturated fat. But the other 50%, you have 45% monounsaturated, so you have about 40%, which is similar to the olive oil, and 5%, which is omega-3 and omega-6.
That third one that you're talking about sounds like the one that we credit salmon with.
Exactly. So, yes, we cannot compete yet with the salmon, but you do have about 5% of that omega-3 and omega-6 that you find in salmon and other fish, yes.
And then, I mean, you know, beef isn't just fat. What else does beef have to offer in the way of protein and vitamins?
Oh, it's an excellent source of protein. So if you take a serving, which is a 3-ounce serving of beef, you have about 25 grams of protein. And then you have other vitamins and minerals. Of course, everybody knows iron and zinc, very important, not only for females, but also for men. You've got, so these are just a few that I can mention, but if you take just the protein, there are one serving gives you half of your daily value of protein, and then you have about 10 other essential nutrients you find in beef.
I feel like the key there when you said one serving and then said 3 ounces. I think
yes.
That's where people get confused.
That's exactly what we are having, right? So, but that is the official size in terms of a serving size, 3 ounces. Of course, we have, you know, at least 8 ounces. So if you take that into account, really the portion that we have, that will give you your full daily value of protein needed.
Yeah, I've never really seen a 3-ounce ribeye.
No, me neither.
Maybe it's best to grill one ribeye and split it among your family.
Exactly. But, you know, that never happens. It's too good to split it with anybody.
Oh, no, it's like that big piece of cake. So tell me about your study. What did your study look at specifically about different breeds of cattle?
So here in Florida, we have a lot of our cattle have some Brahman or both indicas influence in them, and that's because the Brahman cattle are the ones that are adapted to the subtropical environment here in Florida. However, the Brahman, they used to have a leaner meat, and sometimes it's not as tender as let's say, the Angus that everybody's looking for in a grocery store. But we wanted to see in terms of the amount of fat and the fatty acid composition if there is a variation as we go from 100% Angus to 100% Brahman. And we find that the Brahman, because they are leaner, they have a better composition. So they actually have a higher percentage of the omega-3 and omega-6 and the lower percentage of the saturated fat.
Okay, so then the next question, and this is a little bit subjective, of course, but which one of these fats tastes better?
That's a good question. Well, you know, we always, when in our research, we also look at the taste panel when we have consumers coming in and tasting, making sure that if I do have maybe a steak with a higher polyunsaturated, that steak is not going to taste fishy, right, because that's not what you're looking for in a ribeye. So the differences that we find is really not changing the taste profile of that ribeye that much, not to a point where a consumer can taste the difference. So I think it's just the total amount of fat which consumers find good and they are looking for. So in terms of the changes we've seen, the fatty acid profile, that is really not something a consumer could detect.
And then I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned the Angus cow, and people seem to kind of seek that out. I wonder why that is.
Well, it is really, out of all the breeds we have there, is the one breed that has the potential to marble the best. So people, consumers, are looking for that ribeye or that piece of steak that has more fat, more marbling, and that's because that will taste better and they will tend to be more juicy. So Angus is a breed that will have more marbling than any other breed out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. And you said that you were talking about your research and that you looked at the Brahman because it's the cow that does well in our temperature here in Florida, because you were you're in Florida and you were presenting to the Florida cattlemen. Do you foresee the this study going into other breeds that are more Midwestern or Northern?
Yes, we do. We actually have the same, exactly the same project going in just the purebred Angus. I think is important for people, and what we are finding is that, you know, there's a lot of variation. So I'm saying we do have differences among breeds, but even if I take just the purebred Angus, I still have variation. So some of those Angle cows are going to have a different fatty acid composition. So right now we are trying to define the type of variation we have, and then later on, we are going to try to look at how genomics can help to allow us to differentiate between those animals. So maybe we can use that in marketing to say, okay, I've got a steak from an Angus which has more omega-3 compared to one which has less omega-3.
And I'm interested, you mentioned marbling, and one of the most famous marblers is the Wagyu cattle, which is used to make the Kobe beef.
Yes.
What do you think about this breed becoming part of your study?
We are not, well, it could be. We are looking forward to work, you know, with all different breeds. One thing we know about the Wagyu is that not only it marbles very well, but their fatty acid profile is also very different. They actually tend to have a lot more monounsaturated, so they have more of the olive oil type of fat in them. It's not the omega-3 and omega-6, but it's mostly olive oil type of fatty acid.
Not the saturated one. That's so interesting that the different type of cow will have a different breed of cattle will have a different composition of what makes up the whole of their fat.
Yes, you have. That's the natural variation you have in different breeds, just like the ability of the Brahman to adapt to the tropical environment. So you have that variation. Well, you find that variation in other traits as well, and fatty acid profile is not an exception.
So, and another question that I have, are there certain cuts of meat that are going to be more towards the healthier side of fat rather than the saturated side? I mean, I'm looking at a ribeye. I'm not looking at one, but I'm thinking about a ribeye. I'm imagining one, and I'm thinking there's all the saturated fat there, but then I'm looking at the filet, which doesn't have a whole lot of fat, but the fat that's in it, is that composed the same as the fats that are in the ribeye or the New York strip?
No, that's a great point, Julie, and it is different. The fatty acid composition will vary with the amount of fat that you have in that steak. So usually in a ribeye, which has a much higher fat content, you are going to tend to have more saturated fat. If you go to a leaner cut of meat, those usually tend to have more polyunsaturated, so they tend to have more omega-3 and omega-6. So as a general rule, if you have a leaner piece of meat, you are actually going to have more omega-3 and omega-6 than you're going to find in a very marbled piece of steak.
I think it's so interesting how this is going to play out in marketing, you know. And I hear from your accent, you're from Europe, correct?
Yes.
Well, it's interesting.
Romania, yes.
From Romania. I don't know in Romania how they label meats, but I do know that particularly in Italy, they label the meats according to the age of the cow in some cases, and you know where the cow came from. In the United States, we don't have that type of labeling procedure, and I wonder if it will ever end up leading to having meat being labeled by the breed of the cow. I mean, we do have Angus, but
yes,
using the breed of the cow as a marketing tool and then maybe where it came from and the age of the cow as well.
You know, that's very interesting, and maybe we will get there. The production systems in Europe versus the U.S., they are very different. So what you actually have in the U.S., we most of our cattle that ends up in the grocery store is very young. So we do not have that much variation in terms of their age as you have in Europe, where the cattle tend to be a lot older and you have a lot more variation in their ages. So I do not see the age being on a label, but the breed definitely. And actually, you know, you look at our consumers today, they are all interested in eating healthier, even if it's not necessarily the type of fat. But some people do want a leaner piece of meat. So just providing that information and being able to say, this is a steak from Brahman, it is leaner, it has a much better fatty acid composition, that's where I can see the marketing will help.
Yeah, the marketing will definitely kick in for that. And I'm wondering, how much has beef been changed by commercial production, and then how much has commercial beef been changed by science? I mean, this has been an evolution.
Yes, and, you know, we do have different production systems if you just take the grass-fed versus the grain-fed. So you do have a lot of different, you know, big differences in that meat, which is related to the fatty acid composition. I think for us would be important going forward just to make sure that we can provide the consumer that information so they can make the decision. I mean, it doesn't matter what they want, but going to a grocery store, if I'm able to say this has that much saturated compared to this one, then the consumer can pick and choose on their own. There's a lot of research in terms of nutrition. So in the feedlot, what do you feed your cattle to maybe get that marbling? What do you feed the cattle to maybe get a better fatty acid composition? There's a lot of research that goes into that, and all of that is, you know, to really provide a consumer with a better eating experience at the end.
There is a big move towards grass-fed cattle. It's been marketed a lot, and I hear a lot about it all the time. How does a cow living out on a field eating grass differ from one that's being grain-fed or even just grain-finished? Does that have much of an impact?
Yes, and actually all of our beef cattle, they are just grain finished. So they spend in the feedlot, they only spend the last 4 to 6 months of their life. Otherwise, they are started on grass. The grass finished beef is different. First of all, it's leaner, and it does have a lot more omega-3 and omega-6. The only other difference you find in the grass-fed beef is they also have more vitamin A and vitamin E just because of the grass they are eating. But the only downside to that is that production system takes longer, because if I keep the cattle on just grass, it will take them longer to get where I want them to be. So they tend to be a little bit older, maybe, you know, twice the age of a regular grain-finished cattle, which means sometimes it might be a little bit tougher. Their meat might be a little bit tougher than the grain-finished one.
That's really interesting. I've never really thought about the length of time that it takes for them to achieve slaughter weight when they're being raised on grass only. And then I'm wondering, you know, grass-fed in Florida is going to be different than grass-fed in Kansas, because the grass we're able to grow here is going to be different no matter what.
Yes, I'm not sure that makes that big of a difference. So, yes, there could be, depending on what fatty acids you find in the grass, and different areas will have, you know, different flavor grass, so that will go into the meat. I'm not sure how much of that a consumer can really taste.
So I'm wondering, what's next for your research projects? How big is your team?
My lab is really, I have 5 graduate students.
So what is next?
We want to get to the genetics of it. So now that we know that we have this type of variation within the breeds and among the breeds, we want to look at their DNA and find out where is this variation coming from, which are the genes that are controlling and make one animal having more omega-3 compared to another one. I think the DNA will help us both in marketing, because I can test the beef a lot earlier in their life. Right now I need to wait until I actually get a steak from that cow before I can tell you the fatty acid composition with the DNA. I can tell you when it's born what type of meat you are going to get from it. And also for marketing. If I want to make sure that this type of steak is better, I can do it through a DNA test.
Yeah, instead of waiting until the end. I'm wondering, how much time do you actually spend with cows or with steaks?
I spend a lot of time with steaks. I love to eat the steak, but I do spend time with the beef cattle too. So, you know, it's about a third outside with the beef cattle. It's about a third in the lab looking at their DNA, and the other third trying to eat it.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen, you know, vegetarian meat products, and then now we're starting to see attempts to grow actual meat in a lab. Do you see that going anywhere?
I personally do not. But again, it's a consumer choice. So if there are some consumers that do prefer that type of product, I don't see anything bad in it. But in terms of us, you know, being in the agriculture, and the next challenge that we have is the increase in human population and trying to find ways that we can feed that increased population, that's not going to solve our problems. But I do not mind, you know, having another. So if somebody is interested in that type of product, I'm okay for it to be there as an option. But I do not see our entire system going there. It's not sustainable.
Yeah, it's interesting, the discussion of sustainable and the entire system, because there are a lot of people on the earth to feed. And so these kinds of studies are pretty important to understand feeding that many people in a way that is better.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's been really...
You know, the other thing with the... The other thing with the meat that you grow in the lab, a lot of people are against the antibiotics in the livestock industry. But then somehow they are not against that meat which is grown into a Petri dish and it's full of antibiotics.
Oh, yeah, I guess you would need antibiotics to keep that
area
clean. Labs are known for their sterile environment, not being crawling with bacteria. It's been really interesting talking with you. Thanks so much. Dr. Raluca Matiscu, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, perfectly.
Oh, great. Associate Professor of Quantitative Genetics and Genomics in the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Florida. Thank you so much for sharing your research with us.
Thanks, Julie. I appreciate it.
Our show today was produced by Mike Kanairi and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.